housekeeping, Zask, to just make the one more announcement and a reminder that this is the last weekend that we'll have to sign up volunteers to help out with our steak night next Saturday, so a week from tonight. So please, if you are intending to, please sign up so that we have enough folks to cover all the stations to pull off our event. So we appreciate that very much. Also this weekend, before last weekend, the bishop allowed us to do a vote of Mass during either last weekend or this weekend for thanksgiving to God for the gift of human life after the Roe versus Wade overturning by the Supreme Court. So you might notice that perhaps maybe if you're looking at the particular prayers and the missal, they might vary a little bit from what I'm saying at the altar. So just so you're aware of that, we are praying in thanksgiving to God for the gift of our life, right? And I think that's appropriate also, particularly on this this weekend where we celebrate our Independence Day as a nation, that what was our nation founded on? Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You know, and of course we know that without that first of those great things, our life, there is no pursuit of anything else. And so that's why we steadfastly continue to defend that right that we have as human beings, created in the image and likeness of God, to life. I want to zero in a little bit on this first reading here from Isaiah, where there's this imagery that the Lord paints of Jerusalem, the city of Jerusalem, which is really symbolic of the whole nation of Israel, as a mother. And then he also kind of then switches the image of God as a mother that wants to draw his children to himself and comfort them and give them plenitude and blessing. He wants to do that. A little background on Isaiah. Isaiah was a prophet, or the book of Isaiah was actually written probably by three different prophets, following after the initial prophet Isaiah, who was before the nation of Israel, or the nation of Judah, was taken into exile in Babylon. And he was giving warning to them, let's stay faithful to God, and he will stay faithful to us. If we don't, then Babylon will destroy us. Well, that's what happened. They were not faithful, and Babylon destroyed them. But then this part, the very end of Isaiah, the last 11 chapters or so of Isaiah, is so-called third Isaiah, which is after they return from the exile. And they're still, the kingship has not been reestablished. The nation is only a shadow of what it was before, but they are at least back in their homeland. But then God, speaking through the prophet, is giving them assurance, I will comfort you. And ultimately what he's speaking of course, is the coming of Jesus in the establishment of the church. And we see this comfort realized in what St. Paul is talking about in his letter to the Galatians. This is also the conclusion of this letter to the Galatians. And it's not a worldly comfort. It's not a worldly comfort. It's a divine comfort. And Paul speaks of the comfort that he resides in, not in the comfort of the world, but in the comfort of knowing that he is doing the will of God and that he has served God to the best of his ability and has lived in the grace of God. The Galatians were having some real issues of division, and it was primarily over the whole issue of whether the Gentiles needed to be circumcised or not to become truly Christians. Because, of course, Christianity initially sprouted out of the Jews. Jesus was a Jew. He was born into the nation of the Jews. All the apostles were Jews. So there was this movement that crept back in. And mind you, this is a few decades after the ascension and after the apostles start going out and spreading the gospel that this controversy is coming up. What is happening in Galatia is that there are Jewish Christians and there are Gentile Christians, Christians that were not Jews who came into the faith in Jesus. And so the Jews, the Jewish Christians, probably, you know, as they were raised in Judaism and then converted to Christianity, they observed the Mosaic law and they, you know, they had the mark of circumcision on them, the men did. And so, like, they were demanding or saying that in order for the Gentiles to really be Christians, they first really kind of had to be Jews. And Paul absolutely said no. Thank goodness. He absolutely said no, that is not the case. The reason, though, that probably these Jewish Christians were pressuring the others to do so is because they themselves were under pressure by the non-Christian Jews to observe the kosher laws. And if they didn't, they would get reported to the Roman authorities as a cult. And the Roman authorities, unless a religion had a particular antiquity to it, then they would come down hard on it. So that's what was happening, is that Christian Jews were getting ratted out for being Christian, and they were being condemned to the Roman authorities as being a cult. Okay, so these Jewish Christians in Galatia and in many places were maybe personally didn't feel all that strongly about forcing these other Christians to do this thing that they actually didn't have to do. But because they were pressured by the society that they were in, they were then caving in and trying to encourage these others to do things that really God was not asking them to do. And in fact, St. Paul goes so far as to say, look, you are not only are you, is it not necessary to make the Gentiles do this? It is a sin for you to make the Gentiles do this, because we do not place our confidence in the saving power of the Mosaic law anymore, because the saving power that we are drawn into and drawn to heaven by is in Jesus and the grace that he called down for us on the cross. So it is a sin to demand of them that they do that. You're caving in to what these other people are threatening you with is a sin. Does that sound familiar today? How often do we, I hear this all the time. I hear this all the time from people who are so torn up because they have all these divisions that have been injected into their families, because or in their amongst their friends or amongst their coworkers, because they're being pressured by the society to do things that they know God is not calling them to do, rather that are sinful. But they don't want to be agents of division. And I get it. I get it. But the Lord tells us that we are going to be agents of division if we stand for him. There is no avoiding that. And if we do avoid it, we avoid Jesus. We avoid his saving work. We avoid his grace. We avoid heaven. It is really that simple. It is really that simple. And so when Jesus says to the 72 that he sends out, or the 70 in this account, some of the other gospels say 72, he is sending them out with nothing, with no worldly provision. He's making them depend on the goodness of those who will receive him. And he's also telling them, there will be some people that you will have to shake the dust of their town from your feet, because they will not accept you. Do not worry. Do not worry. And I'm sure whenever he sent them out, they were looking at each other saying, what is he having us do? He just told them, I'm sending you out as sheep among wolves, or as lambs, not just sheep, lambs among wolves. Oh, no defense, no worldly provision. Just the sandals on your feet and a walking stick. No money in your bag. No extra tunic, nothing. If you have to sleep out on the under the stars, too bad, right? That's what they're thinking. Oh gosh, we're going to die out here. But they come back, and what do they say when they come back? They returned rejoicing and said, Lord, even the demons are subject to us because of your name. Not what they thought would happen. Not what they thought would happen. But then he also then kind of, he doesn't necessarily throw a wet blanket on them, but he says, don't rejoice because the spirits are subject to you. This power that you see that you have received from me over the forces of the world and the prince of this world, don't let it go to your head. That is from me, not from you. Don't rejoice in that. Rejoice that your names are written in heaven. And if I could translate that into maybe more of a kind of a modern parlance, don't rejoice. Don't rejoice that people think highly of you. Don't rejoice that people think that you're a great guy or a great gal. Rejoice that your names are written in heaven and act like it. Act like it. Act like people whose names are written in heaven. Not that we seek the approval of the world, because the world will never deliver to us what it promises. The world can never save us from hell. Quite the opposite, often. But only God can. Only God can. That is what has, that notion, living in that sensibility, is what has made this country the greatest country in the world, by the way. Because it was populated by a godly people who wanted to serve him more than they wanted to serve themselves. They wanted to serve their neighbor more than they wanted to serve themselves. They were more worried about doing the right thing rather than trying to please people who were not. That is what made this nation great. And that is what is going to keep our nation in the blessing of God or not.